Chapter 1. My Uncle. Looking back from old age, when the faith of Christ has replaced the old religions of my fathers, I can recall many times when my friends and I appeared to be at the whim of powers beyond our understanding. Today, we talk of the will of God. In those far-off days, it was the machinations of the gods or a man's weird or fate that affected his destiny. A man prayed to the gods, put his trust in fate, and life would go well. Unless, of course, he was fey. Unless he had been chosen or doomed to follow some other path. You know, I am not entirely sure I agree with all that. It implies that nothing we do has any effect, that in the end we are all merely pieces on the game board of the gods, just pawns pushed around by Loki. I will accept that most people just live and die with little impact on and little affected by the world around them. But some of us, at least, are more than that. We become part of the world, help to shape it and mould it. You can tell we lived because the world changed whilst we were alive. And in my lifetime, the world changed beyond recognition. I was not long born the day my uncle stood on the battlefield, surrounded by the corpses of his men. They had died defending the narrow gully through hills which blocked the approach to the city of Ibarakum. The city lay to the east, under a pall of smoke that arose from 100 burning houses. King Ayla had taken the army there to capture it, but, hearing reports of an enemy warband coming to lift the siege, had sent Cynric and his company around the city to the west to intercept them. 80 men marched through the night to reach this sunken road. They planted their flag in the ditch so it streamed in the wind, revealing the image of the running wolf emblazoned upon it. Then they gathered about it and waited. They did not have to wait long. Soon after dawn, over 300 spearmen came down the road, and needing to reach the city urgently, attacked at once. The narrow confines of the gully funneled the enemy and brought them onto the spears of Cynric's men. Then the killing began. The enemy paid dearly for each step they took, bled heavily for each wound they inflicted, and 3 died for each of our own men slain. But in the end, it was not enough. One by one, Cynric's companions perished, and as the company dwindled, it was pushed back down the lane. Time and again, my uncle rallied his men, and they charged back into the fray, regained ground, and forced the enemy to retreat. But now, as the sun sank, and the sky turned a crimson red, matching the blood-stained clay of the road beneath them, Cynric's company were all dead. All dead, that is, apart from my uncle Cynric and the grim-faced Grettir. The pair stood on the road in front of their battle standard, Cynric tall and fierce, with hair the colour of autumn leaves, which in the dying light must have seemed almost like flames. Grettir, shorter, stocky and muscular, with black hair and bushy eyebrows. Cynric thrust forward his great sword and pointed it at the shield wall. It was a magnificent weapon, forged from rods of twisted iron, overlaid with the strongest of steel, and crossed with the bronze guard and finished with an elaborately patterned pommel. With it, he now gestured at several enemy warriors, picking out, or so it seemed, his next victims. Strapped to his other arm was his bright blue shield, which was dented and scuffed from 100 sword and axe blows. Grettir had abandoned his, and now both hands grasped the shaft of a fearsome axe that had, already today, slain a score of foes. Together, they glared down the lane and waited for the enemy to attack once more. There in front of them, many more than 100 enemy warriors still remained, and they, having now reformed their shield wall and seeing that only 2 foes were standing, came on again. Ibarakum lay just a mile beyond this lonely pair, standing beside their flag, which now hung limp in the still evening air. If the warband could reach the city, they would swell the numbers of the beleaguered defenders, and the city might hold. If that happened, more of the Ibarakai tribesmen from the surrounding lands would come here. They would save Ibarakum. then the Angles and Saxons like Sindric and Grettir, who had risen up from their scattered villages and come here to capture the city, would be slain. Then there would be no English city, no English kingdom here north of the Humber, perhaps even no English race anywhere. All that was needed was to kill these two men and march on to Eberarkum. For Sindric and Grettir, this was equally clear. All they had to do was plant their feet on the bloody soil and survive just a little longer. Sindric glanced at Grettir and smiled thinly at him. Grettir just nodded back. Both men knew they would die here. It was just a matter of when. The Eberarkai advanced again, and despite the odds in their favour, their faces were pale and their eyes flicking back and forth. They were nervous, cautious, some even terrified. They had seen their friends die and knew these two men were fearsome warriors, so they chose to come together in the security of wood and iron that a shield wall offered. Nonetheless, they finally reached Sindric, and one of them spat at my uncle, and then three spear points were thrust at him. My uncle stepped to his right, deflected two spears with his shield, and then slashed the other one aside with his blade, the heavy steel easily shattering the ash stave. Sindric, following up now, stepped inside the spears and smashed his shield against that of a young lad in front of him. His mouth and eyes wide, the boy stared at my uncle, gave a terrified cry and stepped away, but then tripped on his own spear and fell, knocking over the man behind. "I'll kill you all!" Sindric shouted as he jumped into the breach. "Come on, you bastards!" Grettir bellowed and followed him. Grettir swung the axe to the left and right, felt its edge cutting into bone and flesh, and with cries of agony two men fell, one man dead, the other whimpering as he clawed at his guts, which now spilt out onto the awful-coloured ground. Ahead of them, Grettir could hear his lord roaring as he plunged his sword into two more men, and then, suddenly, Sindric was behind the enemy's shield wall. He turned and cut down another youth, but more warriors now closed in, and Grettir lost sight of him. The last that Grettir saw of my uncle was him screaming in defiance as swords and spears lunged towards him. Then a shield boss thundered into Grettir's middle, and with a whoosh of air he was winded and tumbled out of the fight. He was knocked onto his back and lost his grip on the axe, which spun away. He rolled over, clawing at the ground, desperately trying to reach the weapon. Then, above him, there came a shadow, and he looked up to see a huge enemy chieftain standing astride him. The man was lifting his own blade up, getting ready to finish Grettir. Oddly, though, it was not the sword that Grettir noticed, but the man's face. One eye had been hacked away, and an ugly bleeding gash ran from brow to cheek. Sindric had left his mark on his enemy, and now the man came to have revenge on Grettir. As he swung back his sword, there was a sudden buzzing noise, and an arrow sped over Grettir's head, striking the brute in the right arm. He gave a loud roar of pain, dropped the blade, and with one eye he glared over Grettir towards the city. Grettir bent his head round to look, and almost cried with relief as he saw the glorious sight of hundreds of Angle warriors, English warriors, charging towards them up the lane. Sindric had done it. He had held the road and denied it to the Eberarkai, and now the city of Eberarkum had a new name, an English name, Eorforwic. The enemy fled, and after a final venomous glance at Grettir, the one-eyed chieftain went with them. Grettir took a deep breath and then dragged himself to his feet. He staggered over to where he had last seen Sindric, and now he could feel the tears coming. For there, surrounded by the bodies of his foes, he found his lord lying dead in a pool of his own blood, and pierced by 100 blades. His own sword was laid across his chest, although, whether this was the last homage to a noble warrior by his enemies, the whims of the gods, or just chance, Grettir could not tell.
"Gods, what happened here?"
Grettir turned at the voice, then bowed his head to his king. Aela, the king of Deira, and now conqueror of Eorforwic, stared at the carnage on the road. "Sire, we did what you commanded. The Lord Sindric died bravely, as did every other man." Aela nodded and stood silently for several minutes, taking in the sacrifice that had won him a kingdom.
"Take his body and sword back to his family, and tell them I will see he is remembered. He deserves a song.
Grettir also nodded, but then frowned. I'm afraid I could not write a song to do him justice, my lord.
Ah, but I can, a new voice replied, and Grettir saw, for the first time, a strikingly handsome young man standing next to the king.
I am Lila the Bard, Lila the Storyteller, the man said.
Grettir picked up Sindrick's sword, cleaned it, and handed it to Lila.
I will take care of the body of my lord, and you can carry the sword, Storyteller, for all good stories are about a sword.